This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey, this is Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. We continue with our second interview with John Schaub, author, investor, and landlord. For more information on him, you can check out johnschaub.com.
When did you first get up in front of an audience and share what you knew?
The first class I ever taught, and I never saw myself as a public speaker. I tell you, I took one speech class in high school, and I was not a star. and I never took Dale Carnegie. I never joined Toastmasters. So the first class I ever taught was a real estate law class that the local real estate agents had to take to get their real estate license. And it had a very structured syllabus, you know, so it was a workbook you followed right through. And I was a broker at the point. This was back in 1972, I think. And, I'd taken four or five courses in college on real estate, and I thought I knew quite a bit. In fact, I thought I was one of the smartest people in the world in 1972 because the first recession hadn't come along yet. But anyway, that was the first class I taught, and we had 50 or 60 people in the room, and the first time I taught it, I did a pretty good job, but the second time I was good, and by the third time I had people laughing. I was real confident about this material, and so that's how I got started. And then my friend Warren Harding, who used to teach a class on exchanging, encouraged me to give a talk, so he flew me up to Detroit one day, and I gave up maybe 3-hour talk to a group of people he had. It was called the SEC, they call them, Society of Exchange Counselors, and they thought I was pretty good. And then my friend Jack Miller got old in 1975, and we started teaching this class on investing. So it's kind of a progression there, but I really started teaching more than once or twice a year in 1975.
And when did you meet Pete, and how did you join up with him in teaching?
Peter and I met. He sponsored a class that Jack and I taught up in Danvers, Massachusetts, back in the mid-70s, maybe 76, 77. But I had known him before that because he was a member of the Florida Real Estate Exchangers, and I was real active in that. I was president, exchanger of the year, and did a lot of things with the exchangers back in the 70s. So that's how we got to know each other, and that's why he sponsored our class, because he knew us. And then I sponsored the first class he ever taught, which is I was president of the exchange group at the time, and that was in the kind of mid to late 70s, maybe 78, and so we've been good friends ever since, and his kids are about the same age as my kids, and we all know each other's kids, so it's been a really fun friendship, and I'm, Pete's a lot smarter than I am. I tell everybody that. He's a very creative guy. I'm more of a simple, I'm more of a turtle, and he's a rabbit. He's out doing all sorts of wild stuff, and I'm just plodding along. But we both had a lot of fun doing this, and we both love to teach. So we make a good teaching team because we look kind of things from different directions many times.
Yeah, that's. I guess that was one of the things I was interested in is the different approaches. And you just said Pete's known for being creative. The only class I've ever been in with either of you is we co-taught once in California, and I co-taught once with Pete last year in Florida. So, I got to listen to both of your approaches, if you will. But yeah, you do make a great team. That's a good team.
We end up at the same place. We end up with a whole bunch of real estate paid for, but it's how we get there is different. So it's kind of, everybody's different. Everybody's going to take different approaches in this business. So it's good to hear more than one teacher, I think.
Yeah, and I think, the other thing is, I remember listening to Zig Ziglar speak, and I was interested in speaking, but when I heard him speak, I thought, well, there's no way I'll ever be able to do that, because he was sort of plugged into 220 volt. And then I heard Jim Rohn speak, and I said, well, wait a minute, he's more sedate.
He just talks.
Yeah, and I started thinking, well, maybe there's a chance, because I think that's what happens. I think people get trainers that they can relate to personally. They could say, I could replicate that person. We had a millionaire maker seminar one time. Jack Fullerton was part of it. Mm-hmm. And probably four other people that were very successful, but had completely different personalities and approaches. And I put them all together because I thought somewhere you're going to relate to a buying type where you can say, I could replicate what that guy did.
Yes.
Yeah. in the audience that you're going to have, and your seminar is May 4th and 5th, or 5th and 6th? I'm sorry.
I think it's the 5th and 6th.
Yeah, 5th and 6th. No, I think you're right. It's in front of me. I didn't see it at first.
Yep.
Typically, what's the makeup of your audience? New people or old people just saying, I gotta refresh?
It's a mix, of course. A lot of people bring their kids or their grandkids now in some cases. Been doing it so long. But what we do see a lot of the folks that we've known for 30 or 40 years. I mean, I've had people come back to my classes that took classes back in the 70s. They're still at it. You know, I talked to a gentleman who's taken my class at least a dozen times. He's 94 years old now.
Wow.
He called me on my cell phone. He's one of the few guys in the world that has my cell number. He's a great guy. He's a medical doctor, retired medical doctor, great guy. He's got 12 kids. And all of his kids are in the business one way or the other. One of his kids has written a book on real estate, so it's quite the family. And he called me and said, you know, my kids are putting some pressure on me to think about selling some of my property now. I said, what's your hurry?
Yeah, 90-something.
But he really likes what he's doing, you know. When he finally he worked as a physician until he was pretty far along. It might have been mid-80s, might have been late-80s, but he just likes doing things. He's not going to sit home and watch television. He wants to do something. So I need to give him a call back. But you get people like that. You get some really interesting people who have some great stories. So you'll enjoy meeting some people. You know this from some of the teaching you've done. You get the whole range of folks there. So the exciting part is you never know who's coming.
Yeah, it is fun to have done something for a long time where, you know, your reputation is good and you've treated people right. You know, the audience is probably your best sales tool, if you will. You know, word of mouth is just fun. You certainly have earned the right in Florida and in California. That's pretty cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we don't really advertise. I mean, I don't do any media advertising. It's just word of mouth. I do write a newsletter. I've been writing it since the 70s, so that goes out to a good number of folks. We tell them about the seminar. So that's about the extent of our promotion.
In the seminar, you have categories of, you have three different categories: starter, estate builder, and spender.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain those categories for me? Who fits into those?
Well, you know, I think a starter is pretty well explains itself. You know, we do have people in a room who are starting, and I tell you, you're still starting to get your first $1 million, you know, till you know what you're doing. So it's the people that are in acquisition mode, using high leverage, probably don't have a lot of cash to work with. You know, they're learning how to manage, and they're probably doing some of the things that I did, you know, buying some things they don't like and selling them back off, but hopefully buying to start building an estate, you know, trying to acquire. The guys in the middle, the estate builders, they have a plan. You know, they're good at buying now. They're good at managing, so they're just trying to acquire enough properties to meet their financial goals, whether that's 5 or 10 or 50 million, whatever that number is, they're shooting for. And then the spenders, Peter used to call these enders. And Valerie said, I'm not an ender. She said, I'm a spender. I said, you're right. So we changed enders to spenders because, you know, when you think about it, at some point you want to start spending this. You know, you can't take it with you, so you want to have a little fun with it. And, you know, I've always had fun all the way through. I had a partner, Jack Miller. I don't know if you ever knew Jack.
Oh, sure.
He was quite the character. And Jack and I were polar opposites when it came to spending money. I mean, Jack would not buy lunch. You know, he would have a cup of water and a cracker for lunch. And I can still remember in Vegas one night, we went out after a class, and his wife, Dee Dee, was with us, just the three of us. And Jack was eating crackers and water, and I ordered a Chateaubriand and a $300 bottle of wine for Dee Dee and I to celebrate. He just sat there and watched us eat. life is not about just hoarding money. Life is about using it to have a great time and do fun things with your family and friends, give some money away, all the good things you can do with money. So I've always had that attitude, I think, toward life. So it's a little different approach.
You know, the first time I ever met Jack Fullerton was at a meeting of his. I'd never attended a real estate meeting before. Mm-hmm. And he opened the meeting by saying, anybody that says they can buy and sell properties, I mean, buy cheap enough in California to immediately resell them and make a living is lying. And I heard that and I thought, gosh, that's what I do. You know, and I thought I'd help him out by staying till the end, you know.
Yeah.
And the last person is always the most dangerous one when you're speaking. It's the person that wants to adopt you or whatever. So we were leaving, and I talked to him, and I said, you know, I do exactly what you say in the beginning can't be done. And there were two cars in the parking lot, and this is sort of, he had adopted the don't spend philosophy. So there were two cars in the parking lot. There was a brand new 86 420 SEL Mercedes, and there was like a Ford Pinto type car, you know. And of course, he had the Ford Pinto and lots more money than I did. He just looked at that car and he just wrote me off as a jerk. said, this guy's spending all his dough. So I thought, oh no, that's a bad start. So I actually took a picture of 100 flips I had done and documented them so he could call me back and say, okay, you can speak to my club. And I said, speak to your club. I don't want to speak to your club. but that is how I started. Anyway, that's just kind of funny. But yeah, he must have taken the Jack Miller school of don't spend.
Well, you know, it's funny. The richest guys I know, and I know some guys who are pretty wealthy, you know, don't look like they have any money. You know, I've got a good friend who's a billionaire, and he shows up in cut-off jeans and a T-shirt. You know, he is not trying to attract attention from anybody because he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to loan anybody any money. He doesn't want to give anybody any money. He's pretty happy with what he's got.
Yeah.
So it can go both ways. But, you know, we live in a nice house. We drive nice cars, and you can do both. You know, I think that if you think about it and you get good at what you do, you have the resources to both invest and to enjoy life while you're going around. So certainly you end up with more in the end than you do in the beginning, but you still can have a good time. I bought my first airplane in 1973, you know, 3 years into this business. I bought my first sailboat, I had a 30-foot sailboat in 1973. I went skiing for the first time in 1973. So I've always embraced the concept that you can do both, have both. You can have a good life today and invest.
I'd agree with that. You know, the idea of retirement, you know, we're both in those age categories, and yet, you know, I'm sure you feel pretty exhilarated when you teach in front of an audience. You know, it's still great. We hired Jim Rohn to speak to our group when he was about 72 or 3, and somebody sitting next to me looked over and he said, I wonder why he still does this. And then within the hour, Jim had 3 standing ovations. And on the third one, I leaned over and I said, I think you just found out why he still does it, you know.
Sure.
How do
sure.
you replace that? I mean, that's just he's given back. And
No, I agree. I'll teach as long as that people keep coming. That's what I've been telling people for years. As long as people keep coming, I'll keep teaching because I love it. I just, you know, like to watch people light up when they embrace a new concept or they see a new idea. They know they can use it back in their business. And we have a lot of young people that come. You know, my class I teach in January every year, the Building Wealth One House at the Time class, it gets a lot of kids. We had a third of the class for kids this year. So, you know, people who are in their, when I say kids, in their, a lot of times in their 20s, but, you know, they're just getting started.
Yeah, young adults, yeah.
And those are fun people to teach.
It is. That's definitely business changed my life. And that is what makes you happy when you see light go on or you know, have a history of dealing with people. We've had people turn in, you know, to multi-millionaires and after you've lent them lots of money and now they have no need for the money. And it's kind of fun to just watch that path and go, you know, we had a small part of that. That's pretty fun.
Sure. You know, I can compare what we do to Warren Buffett sometimes, but Warren has had a whole different model. You know, he has controlled all the money. He never pays a dividend, so he's still got all the money he's ever raised and ever made. He's got a one great big pile, but he doesn't pay it out, so the only way you get your money back is to sell your stock. But we've gone just the inverse of that. We've taught people how to make their own money. They get to make their own decisions about when to spend it, when they keep it. And, you know, if you teach thousands of people to do that, you've created a lot of wealth. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I know one of your subjects, it has to do with, you know, basically how to take your income, you know, talking about notes and different ways to do it. And I'm very interested in that since I pay a lot of taxes every year. I'm interested mm-hmm. in figuring out maybe some better way to do that. Yeah.
Well, tax planning, you know, to avoid paying taxes, you have to plan ahead. You can't do it retrospectively. You can't look back and say, well, we're going to redo this part. So it's a matter of how you want to earn your income. And so you start thinking, you know, as you have more and more income, you know, once you have plenty of money to eat off of and pay the rent and you have your cars and you have the house all taken care of, then anything else you earn that's taxed at a high rate is just benefiting the government as much as it is you. So you start thinking about how can we defer some of this income or earn it in an entity that's not going to pay taxes so we can end up paying less in taxes overall.
Yeah.
And again, Bob great example because Buffett continues to complain that the secretary pays more in taxes than he does. Well, it's not her fault. he just doesn't pay himself anything, so he doesn't pay any taxes. You know, if you have $1 billion in the bank, you don't have to pay yourself anything. People will buy you lunch every day.
That is true. Your involvement with Habitat for Humanity, when did you get first started with them? And
1985. I met Millard Fuller was a fellow. He and his wife Linda started Habitat back in 1976, I think. And he came through town, and I'd heard of him before, and I invited him to speak here at our church. And so he came in 1985. I heard him speak, and I really thought this guy knew what he had his act together. I mean, he was talking about he had two visions. One was to eliminate poverty, housing in the world. And that's a pretty good vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I like a guy who thinks big. And the other, because he said the way we're going to do this is we're going to make Habitat for Humanity as well known as the Boy Scouts. We're going to get the word out about what we do and get enough people involved where we'll have masses of people, you know, doing things, doing the right thing. And he did that. I mean, Habitat is probably as well known as a Boy Scout today.
That's true.
Which is pretty phenomenal in a lifetime. That's just one man's lifetime. And Miller's been dead for a number of years. So we started another organization called the Fuller Center for Housing. Miller had actually left Habitat. I was on their Habitat International Board for 7 years, on the local board for more than 20 years. And the organizations change over time. And Miller always wanted a board that had a lot of execs on it. He finally got it. He had the head of all several big banks, the head of several big law firms, all New Yorkers, you know. And he thought that was the right idea, but it turned out to be the wrong idea. Because these guys were not interested in managing a movement. They want to manage an organization. And there's a difference between a movement and an organization. And Habitat was a movement. You know, we were pretty informal. We did things that most organizations wouldn't do. We could react quickly. Mm-hmm. We just did basic stuff. You know, we built houses with donated money, with donated labor, and kept our costs really low. And so the nature of Habitat, which is still a great organization, but the nature has changed over the years because now it's a big, big organization and run by board of directors and professional management. And I never considered myself as professional management. I was just part of the movement. But we started the Fuller Center, which is, again, a movement again. So we're not at the big organizational stage, but we're changing thousands and thousands of people's lives every year. And doing a little different things in Habitat, but it's a lot of the same concept. What we're doing is doing mostly renovations, but we're building right now in El Salvador, we're building a whole bunch of houses with a 3D printer, $4,000 a house. So we're doing some pretty novel things.
And
we're trying to change, you know, we're trying to help people who need help because we're convinced, you know, I'm convinced as a capitalist and a real estate guy that home ownership is, you know, makes people happy. It makes them more stable. It makes them more productive. It makes them taxpayers. You know, it does a lot of things. So, home ownership is still a really noble ambition, I think.
I completely agree. You know, when I was, I got married at 17, and it took 3 years of saving a little $10 in a can to get an accumulated first down payment. And we bought a house, and I remember very distinctly mowing my own grass that Saturday for the first time. And it was the first time that I actually felt like a man.
Mm-hmm.
It was that impactful to me. I knew I was supposed to own part of the American dream, and that day I did.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a powerful story.
That was
true.
Yeah, that's it. I felt like an adult and that I had accomplished something. Even though I didn't have a dime worth of equity, I had my name on a deed.
There you go.
How do people qualify for either the renovation with the Fuller Center or the new home?
It's an income-based criteria, and so we look for people in need who have or low income. You know, we're if you can afford to buy a house, we're not trying to just give you a low cost house. We're looking for folks who normally could never afford to buy a house, and we help them with a zero interest loan, and we help them by using volunteer labor to build. We've renovated 9 houses here in town for the Fuller Center, and a total of 9 houses, we've got about $25,000 cash in all 9 of them.
Wow.
And that's because we use all volunteer labor. And you know that if you use volunteer, the labor is a big piece of it, but if you use volunteer labor and then we can go out and we can get a lot of times used materials because people are, I don't know about your town, but are tearing houses down in this town. So they'll give us kitchens, they'll give us full sets of cabinets, they'll give us appliances, and we'll go pick them up. And so we can get materials dirt cheap. And because we're an all volunteer organization, we don't have any paid staff. Our costs are very, very low. We don't have an office. We don't even have a phone. We're really low key.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, 3D printing houses.
Yeah.
Have you seen that happen?
I haven't been on site, but I've seen pictures.
Okay.
They've got one up and standing. I'm still just amazing to me that things like this are going on. But
yeah,
the world is changing.
Aaron and I have gone to a couple of seminars for 3D printing and robotics and all that stuff. And it's like I have to go several times just to grasp what the heck am I looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
It's changing.
And, I just read an article this week about, how things have changed and how many people, they're worried about computers and, back in the 80s, displacing people. Well, they created so many new jobs. If you think of all the companies that are just computer-based, like Facebook, Amazon, it's just amazing how the world has changed in the last few years. That's going to change again like that the next few years. So hold on.
Yeah, one of the most powerful presentations I ever saw, there was a guy with a street scene from New York, 1899, and mm-hmm. it was all horse-drawn carriages. He says, can you find a car? So there was one car, and then 10 years later, same street scene, can you find a horse-drawn carriage? And it was all cars.
Yep.
And that's
over.
Yeah, in 10 years. And, he was talking about electric cars coming and, that type of thing. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating next 10 years. 3D printing houses, do you have any concern that could get so efficient and actually good that you could 3D print a house in the United States that started becoming way cheaper than building?
I think you could probably print components of the house. I think the standards are high. You're dealing with a whole different set of laws when you go to El Salvador
of
than
course.
You are in Southern California. So I don't know. I suspect they will be able to certainly be able to do components in the house and maybe assemble them rather than just the whole house. I don't see them building a 6,000 square foot house with a printer. But they could build rooms, or they could build cabinets, or they could do something. So as it progresses, who knows what they'll do?
Yeah. Well, John, we're running out of time. Really appreciate all you've done for our industry. I really do. That's your reputation speaks for itself, and that's fantastic. And I look forward to learning from you in May.
Okay. Well, we look forward to seeing you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure talking to you and to be with you. So thank you for all you've done. I really appreciate that.
Hey, this is Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. If you want more information on John Schaub and to find out more information on the seminar coming up in Florida, May 5th and 6th, you can check out johnschaub.com. If you want to catch us with Stay Put or Cash Out in Southern California, we'll be doing it three times in the month of May. May 9th will be at the OCRE Forum in Santa Ana. May 5th, we'll be doing the Apartment Owners Association Million Dollar Trade Show and Landlording Conference in Long Beach. And finally, we'll be doing Homevestors in Burbank, California. That's Stay Put and Cash Out. And you can find out all of our upcoming events on thenorrisgroup.com.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.